So you got to tell me whether if I'm singing and playing, it's all coming through, or whether we need to...
Let me try it this way, just to see.
Does that bother you having that mic there?
No, it's fine with me.
Oh, okay, because I think it sounds better.
When I walk with you, I feel like a man of stainless steel. I have style, moxie, and flash, old fashioned though they may be. I am silvery, sleek, and tall, and the city is at my feet. I am the Chrysler Building when you walk with me. Sound all right?
Keep going. We're on.
Oh, shit. I am not like modern men, but I'm the man I've always been. And though the world has run on ahead, I'm steadfast and tried and true. And I have not lost a step, although nobody seems to notice. But I am the Chrysler Building when you walk, I walk with you. And there's a place that's quiet where the noise gives way. It's peaceful and a bit defiant, keeps the world at bay. And it reminds me that beauty is the natural state of the heart. And I can be the Chrysler Building because you are Central Park. We are each born with a lock. Messed that up. We are each born with a clock and a key and a heavy lock. And we act like the lock isn't ours, but we scour the earth for the key. And when we find the key at last, the clock is just one of those things. I am the Chrysler Building when you walk with me.
Want to play us in? Can you like play under me for a minute?
Sure.
Oh, cool. All right. I just got to tell everybody who we are. Hey, this is John. This is home from here. Had a pretty big weekend, so I needed to go back to my roots. And so I asked Tom Heaney to come in. I say your name wrong, don't I?
You do.
God, say it the right way.
Haney.
Haney. Why do I say Heaney all the time?
Everybody does.
I'm sorry. Haney, Tom Haney. You know him. He's been on the show a bunch of times. He's a master guitar player. He's an author. He's released a couple CDs. And he's my friend.
That's right.
Welcome, man.
Great to be here.
Oh, thank you for coming. I'm still coming off of that weekend thing. And I like yesterday, I actually almost lost yesterday. I was so overwhelmed with stuff that I've never been overwhelmed before. It's a weird feeling.
You know, I have this theory that I find lots of applications for, but it comes to me mostly through listening to people play music. Your brain can take in a certain amount of information in a certain amount of time.
Right.
And then you're done.
There you go.
Right? So if you listen to a piece of music and the words are a lot of words and they're great and there are a lot of music and it's great, I'm tuned out in like 2 minutes.
Mm.
Right? Whereas the same thing, same words, simple music, I can stick with it longer because there's less information I haven't gotten over.
Right, right. I think that's a problem generally.
Yeah.
Is and I attribute the rise in mental illness to that. Just complete overload. And I did so I meditate, right?
Yeah.
And even yesterday, trying to meditate, I was like way far off because I wasn't, you know, I was still overwhelmed and trying to answer people and stuff. And it took me like the whole day just to be able to meditate. And I purposely like didn't play any music, didn't have any TV on, didn't just trying to bring everything down. But yeah. it took a while. It was weird. I've never had that before.
Well, it's a hard thing because the environment is so loaded up with stuff.
Yeah.
Unless you withdraw from the whole environment, you're still getting all this stuff.
Right, right. And it's like people use – it's funny because people use listening to music for that. Mm-hmm. But I'm like you. I'm like, no. The exact opposite effect, right?
Well, I'm working if I'm listening to music.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly
it. I may be loving it, but, you know, it's very hard for me. That's one of the reasons I like to listen to music that I don't know anything at all about.
Mm.
Because I'm analyzing it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the chord there? What's the bass player doing? What's the mandolin player doing? You know, how come I can't follow this? There's all this mental stuff going on. But if it's music that's entirely unfamiliar, it's much easier to sort of sit back and say, oh, hey, that's cool.
Right, right. And stuff that, do you listen to stuff you can't do?
Oh, I do. Well, Andrea and I have been listening to this series. It's on TV. We watch it on Amazon, I guess. But it's part of the Great Performance series.
Okay.
So it's as mainstream a setting as you want. But it's called Now Hear This. And there's a guy, the host is named Scott Yu, and he is a violinist, and he's the conductor and music director of the Mexico City Symphony.
Mm.
So he's not some schmo.
Right.
But he's going around all over the country, and he'll take a particular topic and a musical topic and just chase it down in a way that we're both finding very entertaining.
Mm.
So he was first when he's talking about Vivaldi. So Four Seasons, probably the most popular piece of classical music in the world.
Right.
Most of maybe all of his written music was lost hundreds of years.
Really?
Yeah. It was like in the last century.
Right.
That it was found again.
Okay.
So who knew?
Right.
But, you know, Beethoven loved his stuff. All the guys who knew their onions, they loved his stuff, but then it was all lost.
Right.
So he's... I don't know if I've got the right one. Anyway, so Vivaldi learned his stuff from here, wherever it is. And he would trace it around. Then the next one was Scarlatti. So Scarlatti was Italian, learned his stuff in Spain. So he goes to Spain. What's the music in Spain at that time? So a lot of it is Islamic.
Wow.
So he's talking to oud players.
Mm.
There's one guy in particular who played guitar, I'm gesturing with my hand so everybody can see. So this Islamic music was a source for Corelli was a source for the guy that they were talking about. Also a source for flamenco music. Hundreds of years later.
Wow.
And so the show is tracing this kind of stuff. And it's been really very interesting. And neither of us are big classical music fans. But I look at what these people... And of course, he's always talking to actual players who know the music and can play it. And these people are just incredible. And they're nobody that I would have heard of.
Right.
It's just... Like he was talking about Schubert. Schubert died when he was, I don't know, 35, 38, something like that. So the host is only talking to musicians who would have been around Schubert's age when he was writing. So these people are in their 20s or their 30s, and it's astonishing to me what they can play.
Mm.
Just astonishing. And, it's a level of commitment and pursuit of detail and absorption in this music that I, as far as I know, classical music is the only place where this exists.
Yeah, because in the classical tradition, you're allowed to use the word discipline. they're right?
Yes,
in folk, like what we do, it's fun, sure. Practice, sure. But, and you're disciplined about it to the nth degree. But, you know, but most people, you know, you say, I use discipline to play music. And if you're a folk singer, they laugh at you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how that's, yes, that's a, there's a whole bunch of truth to that. But in the, like the bluegrass world, if you want to be a functioning bluegrass banjo player, somebody who's good.
Oh, you got, yeah.
That's tough stuff.
Yeah.
In the jazz world, you know, it's, so it's there. And the problem I think is we learn this stuff as kids when discipline is a foreign idea.
Mm-hmm.
Discipline is, in fact, in the music business, as far, not the business, but in the world of playing music, as far as I can tell, is an extremely satisfying thing.
Mm.
It's not the reason for doing this stuff, but it's a big piece of the reason for doing the stuff.
Right.
For me, at least. And I wish I had learned that a long time ago. You know, people say, oh, I have to practice. I'm so mad I have to practice. I'd rather be doing anything else but practicing. I've gotten to the point where if I don't start the day practicing, it's a lousy day. There's things that happen in that space. It didn't happen every day, but it's just a space where it happens when it happens. It is dealing with, it's having discipline and focus in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have said, it's kind of like a meditation and that your mind is here and it's not over there.
Right.
It's just here and you just leave it here for a couple of hours and then you go on about your day. And that's it's satisfying and it's a rewarding way to spend your time and it makes your life a little better. And, you know, I didn't really understand any of that until I tried to write about this stuff and try to explain why would I do this and how is it possible to do it better? That was the other thing. I understood that practicing was something you could get good at.
Mm.
You know, who thinks about that?
Nobody. Right.
Anyway, I'm even sure how we got down on this rabbit hole.
Practicing is interesting to me. I'm struggling with the idea of better mm-hmm. now because on the one hand, like songwriting contests and stuff like that, I'm rabidly against.
Yes.
I've judged them, I've participated in them, and now I'm against them. But then on the other hand, I know that I can get better if I practice, which means that some music's better than other music. If I practice for a week and I'm better than I was last week, this week's music is better than last week's.
No, you're better.
Right. Okay. Right. So right. As a musician,
the music
I'm better.
Is what it is. And you have, if you're trying to learn to play Stairway to Heaven, God save us. That's a job to do. And,
right.
And a third person can stand on the outside and say, well, okay, I heard John play Stairway to Heaven last week, and he plays it better this week.
Right.
Stairway to Heaven has not changed.
Right? John has changed. So John's a better musician this week.
John is a better musician.
So.
And a better person.
But the logic still applies then. If I can be a better musician this week than I was last week, then there is a better to musicianship. And
yes.
If there is a better to musicianship, maybe competition is legit.
I would say you're the only one who really knows that you're better. I mean, there's a kind of objective kind of thing from the outside where, okay, he didn't play that passage as smoothly this week as he did last week or whatever.
Right.
But so much of this is subjective and internal. And, you know, I can't tell you that Layla is a better piece than Stairway to Heaven. I like it more.
Right.
I can't tell you it's better.
But in the classical tradition, there is a whole bunch of better, because we were talking about discipline, yeah. and you know, and you were right. Like it's most obvious in classical tradition. Classical tradition is fraught with competition and discipline and better.
Mm-hmm.
And the music, you can feel it.
Yeah. I would say, and I've never thought about this before, but that's kind of like there's a difference between music and the music business.
Yes. Right?
Music business is a product of music. It's not the other way around.
Right.
The notion of competitions in classical music, that's a way to spur people. It's like it's an important thing for players to at that level to get. That's just how you get to be that good.
Right.
It's a device for getting good musicians.
Right. Right.
That's it.
Right.
You know.
Well, and then I'm like, you know, because what we do, play guitar. I'm really diving down into learning to play slower,
mm-hmm.
Because I see 6-year-olds shred on YouTube all day long, but you don't see very many people trying to play slower and trying to let notes last.
Yeah.
And so I'm really drilling down into playing slower. It looks, if you're watching me, it looks more rudimentary. He's like, oh, he's only doing one chord. Let's go. Make your hands move. So people would think that's not as good as, you know, watching somebody shred. But it is. It's just a different discipline. So I go back to then there is no better.
Yeah. Well, I come back to the – what matters in that situation is your experience of playing the guitar slower or faster. And I would say there's a whole lot to notice when you play, and a lot of it you really can only notice when you're going slow.
Right.
Anything else is, I would not say unimportant, but less than secondary.
Yeah.
Anything other than your experience of playing the music. Now, if you get out and you get on stage and you say, I'm going to play this piece of music and this is how it comes out of me. And some people say, wow, that was great. And some people say, you know, I wish you had played Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
None of that matters.
Right.
If you have reached somebody, and you have gotten a channel from your soul to somebody else, that's what matters.
Right.
And there's the whole entertainment side, which is different. And I get that. You want to see somebody play fast and flashy. It's a lot of fun. It's cool.
It's cool, yeah.
It's great. It's not that it's terrible. It's just secondary.
Right. Right. And I always feel when I watch people do that, not so much for electric, because I don't touch an electric guitar, but when I watch people on an acoustic guitar, I feel like you're interrupting the guitar. I feel like, you know, I feel like the guitar wants to hang on to that note, especially if it's a good guitar,
mm-hmm.
wants to hang on to that note and change it the longer it goes.
Yeah.
And you're interrupting by moving to the next one too fast, and it's like, it bothers me almost.
And I think especially true of acoustic guitar, there's a speed at which you're just going too fast for the instrument.
Yeah.
Because there's so much cool stuff happening.
Banjo's different.
Banjo's different. Fiddle's different.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, acoustic guitar, it seems like there's an upper speed. For my taste, there's an upper speed limit. And there are great, great fast players.
Yeah.
There's a video I stumbled across. What's her name? Bronwyn Keith Hine. She's a fiddle player. And she's, you know, I don't know, she's in her 20s.
Right.
And she's just great.
Right.
And she's got this video out, new recording out. I forget the name of it. In this world, will you ever be mine? Something like that. Will you ever be mine? And so she's in a studio, and she's got bass player who's maybe in his 30s, mandolin player maybe in his 30s, guitar player is Brian Sutton. I don't know. He could be her father.
Right.
Backup singer could be her father. The banjo player could be her father. And these guys are just so good.
Mm.
And she's playing a million miles an hour, and it all sounds fine. Brian Sutton is at this sort of speed limit that I'm talking about for me, where it still sounds like a great guitar and it's a million miles an hour. Banjo player's just sitting there like he's not even awake, and it sounds great. But yes, in terms of that sort of guitarist.
Well, I'm watching these, you know, Molly Tuttle is?
Yeah.
So I'm watching Molly Tuttle and Tommy Emmanuel have this video series out. And, you know, it's different chapters. They talk about how to get good sound out of a guitar and how to blah, blah. And he's playing so fast that my response is, it doesn't matter what guitar you're playing. And he's talking about the guitar. And I'm like, I can't hear what you're describing because you're just going.
Yeah.
You're going too fast. And you're right. It's fun. It's fun to watch.
I had a video up of Tommy Emmanuel and Martin Taylor. And what were they playing? Honeysuckle Rose. Mm. And I put it on for Andrea and said, look, these guys are great. And she was like, when is this going to be over?
Yeah.
Because of that, it was too fast. Great guitars, too many notes. You can't take it all in. It doesn't sound as rich as it would. You hear Tommy Emmanuel play something slower. What's the one he does? If I Had You.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of space in that. Sounds a lot better.
Yeah. And I'm doing this. I have this weird expert on my guitar. I'm having this weird experiment right now. So I play an AN-10, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know if I told you this story. So some guy gave me an AN-10.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was afraid to play it. And then I finally became like ashamed of myself this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you have to play it.
Yeah.
I'm starting to put some hours on it. It's the same exact guitar. I can tell by the serial number. They're made within like 3 months of each other, same year. Completely different animal.
Sure.
But it's amazing how much. And you know, I was playing for Trish, and I'm like, look at this. This is the same guitar as this. It's just one I have beat the shit out of, and the other is still a virgin.
Yeah.
And what a difference! It's so weird.
And can she hear it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She can hear it. Yeah. 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 I don't think she would have been able to when we met, but
My contention is the more money you spend on a guitar, the fewer people can hear the difference between that guitar and some other guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a cap.
You're getting into the weeds a little bit when it gets to the high end stuff, and it's gorgeous. But most people say, "Oh, that's pretty."
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like anything else. I think people want to throw money at something instead of time. And a guitar gets better with time. It doesn't get better with money.
You know, I've been playing an electric guitar a bunch lately. And it's astonishing to me how different the touch is and how long it takes playing this guitar for me to get anything like a decent sound out of it. Because the touch is so different. And so I'm saying, after I've had it out and I've been working on with it for a month or so, then an hour into playing it, I'm getting the sound that I want. I have some control.
Right. And is that the golf tennis thing, though? Are you ruining your acoustic game?
I honestly don't know.
Because you know what I mean, right?
Yeah. So the big thing is the acoustic guitar requires a lot more force. You have to play it harder.
Oh, wow.
This guitar, it's a lovely guitar. It's a Gretsch. It's based on the Chet Atkins model in the Country Music Hall of Fame. But if I play it with the same pressure in my left hand, it'll go out of tune.
Oh, wow.
If I play it with the same pressure with my right hand, the G string is louder than everything else.
Mm.
And when this first happened, I thought, I just got to sell this guitar because it's no good.
Right.
But after a whole bunch of sounding terrible and backing off in the sound, all of a sudden it's, oh, hey, this is pretty good.
After a world of sounding terrible, hold on.
Well, which is the nature
of what are you doing with it, though? Are you do you have a project in mind? Or
I have a couple things in mind. So there's a friend of mine who has a trio that he plays in an Italian restaurant in Hartsdale on most Tuesday nights. His name's Dan Elias, and so it's clarinet, guitar, and bass. Sometimes a fiddle player shows up, And they play the standards, you know. And so every now and then I will go and sit in with them, and I'll play one or two songs. And it's been very educational for me, and skyrockets my respect for these guys who can do this the way they do it.
Yeah.
And so it would be kind of cool to play this guitar in that setting.
Oh, okay.
I also have sort of solo arrangements of standards, which I like to play a lot, and I kind of like to hear what that sounds like on this guitar.
Okay.
And then I don't know where songwriting would go if I was playing an electric guitar instead of
okay.
an acoustic guitar. So there's that. I read this. There's this guy I read on Substack named Ted Gioia. Have you ever heard that
name?
No. He writes mostly about music, but very far ranging. He's a brilliant guy, and he was writing about trance music.
Okay,
and not specifically music that's not as a genre, but as sort of a function of music. So music has existed in every society in the world forever. It's very often had a religious or cultural or mythological or spiritual component.
Mm-hmm.
And component is probably too small a word for that. But there's this aspect of it that gets people kind of in an altered state. And
right.
It's used, you think of it as in a rave where everybody's dancing, the music's loud, the beat in it. But in traditional cultures, if the shaman is about to start his journey to the underworld, there's music involved with that, and in order to get people going like that, there's got to be like at least 10 minutes long,
right?
And there's got to be rhythm, and there's got to be something for the people to connect to, and so that's an interesting idea to me.
Mm.
How do I, if I wanted to write something and play it for people, I mean, 10, 15 minutes long, and they were just completely into it, you know, to the point they're tapping their feet, they're singing along. I love that stuff.
Mm.
You know, I talked about this Bronwyn Keith Hines and this bluegrass song. I listen to that, and every time I hear it, I say, wow, that's great. You know, and you want to dance, you want to be
right.
in it.
Right.
You know, and that's hard to do with me. That's not an avenue of music I've ever had any, I've never been able to do.
Right. That's funny you say. I have one song that it takes me like a month to practice. I haven't played it in forever, so I can't. But I have one song that's just instrumental, and it's maybe 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do play it, that's the one that everybody's like, you know, yeah. Oh, my God, give me more of that. And I'm like, I can't. Because
there is no more.
Right. But I have a theory about it, though. My theory is that songs like that impact the way you breathe.
Yes.
I think you start involuntarily breathing rhythmically.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes every part of chemistry.
Yeah.
And so I think like trance music, same thing, changes the way you breathe and you fold into it.
Yeah.
Because I'm
tapping your foot.
Yeah.
You know, tapping your foot is dancing in your chair, basically.
Right, right.
And so that's part of the same thing. There was something that I was talking with Andrea about after Sunday. It was a very emotional day for a whole bunch of reasons. But there's something for me about singing long held notes that is emotional, that allows emotion to come out, I should say.
Right. It's the breathing.
It's the breathing. It's also the vibration.
Right, right.
And then there's the fact that the people around you are doing it too. That's all part of this. It's all real powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And we have become, I think, we've gotten away from that. You know, where does that happen these days? It happened at church. It happened at a concert, maybe, if the right concert.
Yeah, but rare. That's a rare concert, though.
So often the concerts are focused on what's happening on the stage, and to me, what's the magic is what's happening in the audience.
Well, and the other, yes, you're right. And the other weird thing is musicians aren't surrounded by musicians a lot. And it was so interesting to see on Sunday, so interesting to see that unfold. And it was being videoed, but the point wasn't video.
Yeah.
So nobody was really worried about performing.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was really worried about, nobody's really worried about standing out. And it's interesting for musicians, especially, you know, especially around here, because most musicians are, you know, like you and me, solo or duo, trio, you know, you don't have to deal with 20 other people.
Yeah.
It was so interesting to watch people fold into that over time.
Mm-hmm.
And like we, you know, I saw the first take, somebody videoed the first take, and I watched the first take, and I was talking to Trish about it. She's like, I heard that first take, and I was like, uh-oh. and then, but by the time everybody had bought in, it was, you know, wow.
Yeah.
And I was trying to call you down to sing on that last one. I was calm down.
Thank you. But I had...
You didn't feel well, right?
Yeah, I didn't tell you what happened before I got there.
Oh, what happened?
So I've been fighting this cold literally for a week. I had not really sung to any extent until Sunday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I really wasn't... I could... Rehearse was here, but not here.
Right.
So I actually on Thursday night I was at the ER because we were concerned about it, and you remember in September and October I was in the hospital and it was a mess that started with the same kind of thing.
Oh wow!
So
okay,
this time just a cold.
Okay, good.
But I had with me these cough suppressants,
right?
And prescription cough suppressants, little gel pill. So we're getting. We're on the road to the airport. I said, all right, I don't want to be coughing all day while they're trying to record this, so I'm going to take the pill.
Did it put you on your butt?
It was much worse than that. It got stuck in my throat.
Oh, no.
Started to dissolve. And if you can imagine somebody reaching into your throat and releasing a topical anesthetic... I said to, and I was drinking water, and it was not getting
not
to
doing it.
So I said, we may have to go to the emergency room. Because I didn't know that my throat was going to close completely.
Oh, right.
So on one hand, I'm saying emergency room. The other hand, I said, just get me something to eat. Because that.
You know. Right, force it down.
And so we drove past a McDonald's, went and got a chocolate shake, and that did it.
Wow.
But we were
– That is
McDonald's
the,
is 2 miles from the airport.
Right.
So
oh, you were that
– We were that close.
That is the only time in the history of man that a milkshake has helped someone sing. Right? Do you want to do a song?
Sure.
Awesome.
Speaking of not being able to sing, excuse me for all the coffee.
Nah, I'll cut that right out. What are you going to do?
As you,
I love that. I know every time I see that guitar, I say I love it, but I do.
Yeah, and this is my this is an Alvarez, and I won it, so I feel like I have to talk about it because I won it.
Do you have guilt? Do you feel like you didn't earn the guitar?
No.
Good.
No. but it does make me think I'm not going to win any more guitars. So you know that I often write a cycle of songs.
Yes. And which is a great way to work, by the way. And I read what you write. You should write about that.
Okay.
Writing in cycles, because I kind of feel like people try to exhaust a theme in one song, and if the theme's any good, it can't be exhausted in one song. So I love that. I love that muscle flex of artistry to say, okay, well, I hit it from this angle. Now I'm going to go around and hit it from this angle. And now I'm going to go around and hit it from this angle. It just makes you a better songwriter.
Well, that's a cool idea. It's not the approach that I take, but it's a very cool idea.
Well, you just said you're writing cycles.
Yes, but I don't so the current cycle, it's called Wingmen.
Okay.
And it's got angels in it. Every song's got angels in it.
Beautiful. Okay.
But I don't have a notion, well, I've just successfully described this kind of angel. Maybe got to look at it from a different point of view. Like, for example, there's one thing I was thinking about, picturing. When my father died, he was ready to go.
Right.
And so I'm picture sort of standing in his kitchen, listening to him talk to an angel at that moment. So, right? So that's coming at it from an angle that says, I want to explore this side of the angelic idea. Some of these others just came from left field. So it's not like there's a coordinated
analysis. Got it. Okay, I see what you're saying. Right. Okay. Where are you with angels?
In terms of in my
life.
Philosophy?
Yeah.
I think there's plenty of stuff we can't explain.
Yeah, man.
And angels exist mostly in the Christian, Jewish, and Islamic traditions. But, you know, in other traditions, there might be spirits or demons or other kinds of things that are supernatural beings of some kind that have some kind of reason for interacting with human beings. And I don't pretend to be able to explain any of that.
Right.
I've never had an experience that I would say, oh, wow, that was an angel.
Mm.
I have read stories of people who have had those experiences, you know, and I can't deny them, and I can't say, no, you're making that up, and I can't say, well, there are no angels, so that couldn't have happened. I don't know.
Right.
But I don't have anything personal to hang my hat on there. I think the idea that I like is thinking about angels kind of separate from any theology,
mm-hmm.
That they have things to do, and we have seen them over time, whether in folklore or however, doing those things, and we have lorded them up with theology, which works for some people, doesn't work for other people.
Right.
So I guess what that all boils down to is an interesting thing to explore in song, and then people can draw their own conclusions after that.
Yeah, yeah. I love your idea of taking theology out of it, and I've been thinking a lot about like our resistance to, because I'm kind of stepping away from church now, and I realized how resistant people are to invest in stuff like angels that they can't see, and because people only trust their own frequency.
Yeah.
And then I'm reminded of sounds that a dog can hear that I can't, and I'm like, and brings me around to this whole idea that defining the world only from what I can perceive, mm-hmm. is a really dumb way to approach things.
My favorite thing along those lines, and it's only remotely along those lines, it's just me having a chance to mention it. If you had tried in 1900 to predict the things that would have the most dramatic impact on the 20th century, nobody in the world in 1900 would have seen the computer coming.
Right. Yeah. Right. 100% right. Even though you had the advocates, you had the advocates forever. So you had the idea that this machine can think something I can't think as fast as it can. But you're 100% right. Nobody would see the computer. If you'd shown a cell phone to me when I was a kid, I would say it was witchcraft.
Yeah.
Microwave. I still don't understand a microwave. Yeah. Witchcraft. So there's
lots of stuff out there that
but with what sorry, I keep interrupting your song, but what amazes me is how afraid we are to accept and rely on things that aren't on our frequency, that just because they can't see, like, it's so limiting for people to conduct their life like that.
It's protective too,
but that's limiting. Yeah, it is protective. It's harder work to, and maybe talking about prayer or whatever. You know, when a prayer doesn't get answered the way you wanted it, mm-hmm. to, you kind of discredit prayer, and so you're right. It is safer. It hurts less, but it's also just to only, your dog can hear stuff, you can't. To only think that there's the total of the world is what you see it as is a very silly way to. I'm sorry. Can you sing, please?
I will. All right, let's see how we do here. There's an angel on my shoulder. His name is Mojo. White t-shirt and black jeans. And he sits by my right ear. And when I'm faced with temptation or danger or some kind of moral or ethical dilemma, I know I can count on Mojo to disappear. Now you'd think an angel want to help you out in a tight squeeze or a rough patch or if you've got some kind of problem to be solved. But angel is it? Mojo is the angel of call me tomorrow. Not my job, I don't want to get involved. So there I'll be up a creek, want to run and hide. No one's got my back, no one's by my side. And I say, what would I do if I had Mojo? What would I do? I have a dog. His name is also Mojo. White face and black ears. Spots on all the rest. Now, also Mojo likes to run, eat, sleep, play, and bark at nothing. When it comes to how I conduct my affairs, he has nothing to suggest. But still I ask him, and he looks at me, as though this is something that he thinks I should already know. So, with nothing from him, I turn to Mojo the Angel. We've already heard how that's gonna go. So there I'll be up a creek, wanna run and hide. No one's got my back, no one's by my side. And I say, what would I do if I had Mojo? What would I do? Joe speaks. He says, listen, sonny, I'm not your designated driver. I'm not your conscience, your bodyguard, your get-out-of-jail-free card, and I'm not your bulletproof shoes. I don't mind helping, but I'm not gonna do your laundry. What I mean to say is, you break it, you fix it. I got better things to do. But while we're talking, you act like you have all these problems. But it's really just the one, let's call it run and hide. And I gotta tell you, if that was gonna work, I think you'd probably know by now. All these years I've known you, it's the only thing I've ever seen you try. What about stop and think? What about stand and fight? I think either one of those would be a whole lot better than all of this run and hide, not to mention, what would I do if I had Mojo? That's not helping. What would I do? That's my team. A man, a dog, and an angel. One's nervous, one's cranky, one's wise but enigmatic. And the three of us tumble through this world together to do the best we can. But it will come as no surprise. Our results can be erratic. Stop and think might help. Stand and fight doesn't sound like me. So run and hide may have to go. But for now, I guess we'll just wait and see. And in the meantime, when things get weird, I sing the song that brought me here. What would I do if I had Mojo? what would I do?
Yeah, man. That's a good song.
Thank you.
That's a really good song.
That one took months.
Did it really?
Yeah, because I... So what's the starting point? I got an angel that doesn't do anything.
All right.
Where are we going? About that?
Right. That's the whole song. I got an angel that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Do you... So you've never had an experience with an angel?
No.
But you've heard stories.
Well, when I started on this project, I went and found books of stories.
Oh, okay.
Because they're out there. There's a woman who... it was like her PhD thesis was talking with people who have angel stories.
Mm.
And sorting them out into, you know, these had a physical presence. So these was just a voice. And in some cases, it was just a smell or it was just a feeling.
Right.
And then she would say, well, okay, 30% of the stories, there's a physical presence.
Right.
And of that 30%, 80% reported by women and 20% reported by men or whatever the numbers
right.
are. So it was a... You know, she was not a person who was already interested in angels, just went and found things that supported her beliefs. This mm-hmm. was somebody who was coming from a more statistical point of view.
Right. I had a weird experience. So I have a – she comes on the show once in a while. Her name is Shane, and she's a medium.
Mm-hmm.
But her connection is with people who have passed.
Right.
And so she came on the show, and I was like – So she could tell I was that way.
Yeah.
And so when we got done, she's like, listen, come and see me yourself. Just you privately. Come and see me. And then, you know, well, and then tell me what you think.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and saw her. And there was some stuff in there that was, you know, you would have had to – you could probably have found out about me, but you would have had to dig pretty hard. But maybe mm-hmm. that's what she did, dig pretty yeah. hard. But some – and there was some good stuff. So we finished. And so Gramercy's signed up to go to a trip her senior year to the Bahamas for their senior trip. And she wanted to go. The school uses this particular company, but the company looked really sketchy to me. And so I was like, is this a real company? Why am I, you know? And so I was really worried about mm-hmm. it. And it's an unsupervised, there's no...
chaperones.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
No chaperones. And like the company website got like some good reviews, some bad reviews. I'm like, is this... And... But you got to pay every month to right. go on off the trip. So I'm like, is this what happened? But so I hadn't told anybody. I mean, Trisha knew, but I hadn't told anybody about that. And as I'm leaving, she goes, wait. She goes, and I don't think she knew Gramercy's name. She goes, Gramercy? And I go, my daughter. She goes, Bahamas? And I go, what? She goes, she's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Just told her. And no, but I didn't tell anybody. So that really, that wigged me out.
Yeah. Well, the trouble with that kind of... field is that there's so many charlatans in it.
Right.
And there's such well traditional technique for employing charlatanism.
Right.
Then it's hard to say, well, here's an actual legitimate person.
Right.
Because it's hard to separate them out from
right.
from the non-legitimate people.
Yeah. I'm giving Shane legit, though, because there's right. no way you could have known that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you can look up my birthday, but you can't look up. It was just so wild to see that. But I angels are weird. Like that thing we just did over the weekend. So much of that stuff fell into place without me working on it. That I was mm-hmm. like, is that am I getting help here a little bit? Because so many things fell into perfect place without.
Okay, so here's the thing for me. And again, this is getting way past how I conduct my life and what I understand. It's I could see that a project like this one could generate enough goodwill that good things would start to happen in a way that we can't necessarily explain. So
that's like a vibration.
Like
almost.
A vibration. Like there's some kind of channel out there, and you just get in the right channel all of a sudden. You don't have to make any turns. The road is smooth.
Interesting.
And that there could be 1,000 spirituality-based explanations for that.
Right.
Angels being one of them. And there will never be a scientific, you can't measure that. There's never going to be a scientific explanation for that.
Right.
So from a scientific point of view, that's just, forget it. It doesn't exist.
Right.
Well, who knows? Yes, it's unexplainable, unmeasurable, not something to count on, but still kind of interesting that it's there.
Well, it would be, so I like your frequency idea. It would be interesting if you could figure out how to only do things that created that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people call it flow or whatever, but only do things that create that frequency. But you can't recognize it until it's already come and gone almost.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we didn't have risers until Thursday, and all of a sudden somebody wrote and was like, me and my dad, I know where to get risers. Yeah. Me and my dad will go pick them up. And I'm like, I never even met this person. I'm like, okay. You know, but that's, it's that kind of.
And there's a certain thing that happens when a lot of people are interested in a project. That becomes easier than if two people are interested in the same project.
Yes.
And you could explain that as some kind of karmic thing. Or you could say, well, you've got more hands in the process.
Right, right.
And I don't know.
Now you're getting married.
Yeah.
Get married in a church?
In a church. It's a church in the Union Church in Pocantico Hills.
Oh, I love Pocantico Hills.
Have you been in this church?
I have. I know it. I know the church. Okay. I've not been in it. Yeah.
So
Pocantico Hills is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this church was built in the 20s.
Small church.
Small church. Yep. 100 people, thereabouts. The windows, the stained glass windows, is one by Matisse and the rest are all by Chagall.
Is that true?
That is true.
That's craziness.
And they're stunning and they're unlike any stained glass windows you're ever going to see in your life anywhere.
That's amazing.
And then there's a little church hall attached to it, also built in the 20s. It looks like, you know, it's got a little balcony. And I picture Tom Sawyer and Huck Flynn watching their own funeral from the balcony. It's got that old kind of vibe to it. It's a very pretty setting.
So. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Do you have a date?
June 22nd.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Wonderful. That's fantastic.
You should have gotten your invitation.
I didn't.
We will take care of that.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. No, thank you. I'm super excited for you. Now, you're not religious, but you're getting married in a church.
Well, you need a place.
You do need a place.
You need a place. And I like a lot about the churches work as architecture. Old churches especially.
Yeah.
They work.
Yep. That's a great way to say it. Yep. It's a great space.
And this is not there's going to be a minister because there has to be somebody who can issue.
Gotta have a license.
Gotta have a license.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be a theological overlay to it.
Right.
It's really a way to get a bunch of people together, some of whom know each other, some of whom have never met, and have a public thing saying, look, this is us from now on. We are together. We are a couple. And join us on this adventure.
That's a great song. This is us from now on.
Yeah.
That's a great.
All right.
Yeah. Write that down.
I've got it recorded.
Oh, okay. Right. Do you when you get ideas, how do you track them? Do you talk in your phone?
I have a bunch of stuff in the phone, which has generally saves me if I'm driving and I'm.
Right.
But a lot of it just comes out of grinding it out.
Same here. Same. Like I random thoughts don't really come to me.
I get little bits, but it's usually clever wordplay, and I really don't want that.
Right.
That's
people write puns. That's a different business.
So it's grinding it out, and I think in the song I just did. The only thing I had going in might have been, what would I do if I had mojo? And that's kind of like, you know, what would Jesus do? That notion.
Right.
And then you do it.
Right.
What would I do if I had mojo? Well, just do it.
Right.
Do that. Whatever it is, do that.
Right.
And the rest of it, you know, I was stuck in that for months. The dog helped.
Yeah.
Because I tend to be way too serious about stuff that I'm writing, or right. tried to get too serious in the song, and I was stuck, and the dog was just, all right, well, let's have a dog.
You ever dial back the music so people can pay attention to the words?
Sure.
You ever amp up the music to make up for the fact that you don't like your lyric?
No.
Never?
Never.
Oh, I'm guilty of that.
No. Because, you know, I'm willing to spend, I have spent years trying to get a song right.
Right.
But the other piece of it is it's not an exercise in words. It's an exercise in the combination of words and music. So it's all got to be right.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually starts with words for me, but then once they connect, it's really all got to be right, you know. And if the words aren't doing it, they've got to change.
So you're more diligent about that than most people, because I have this litmus test now, and your songs pass it all the time. I have this litmus test now, but you would be amazed at how often songs do not pass this test. If I can tell you the first time you hear your song what your next lyric is, then you haven't spent enough time on the words. And I can do it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's you should try it. It's an interesting experiment. When you're hearing stuff that you haven't heard before, just stop it and say, okay, the next line is going to be, you know.
Yeah.
You just said love, so the next line is going to have above in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just haven't worked hard enough on it. And that's for me, it's almost lyrics first all the time. Write a poem and then figure out where it's going to go. Because otherwise I just get comfortable, or I repeat, or I – and you do bridges. I don't do bridges.
Well, bridges – there's – a bridge is a change.
Yeah.
Very often it's a change of the key, or the change of the perspective of the lyrics.
Right.
Different kind of melody. And I think all that is wonderful, and it's –
Oh, it is great. It's just – every time I come upon a bridge that I'm like in a song I'm writing, I'm like, no, that's a whole nother song. Just do that over there. Because you always have that. Well, I always have that. This is a good question for you. Do you have this? Like that last song I wrote, that's the last song I'm ever going to get.
I do get that sometimes. Not as much as I used to, because it's not a product of inspiration.
Right.
You know, my father used to talk about the glue on the seat of your pants. What is it that keeps you in the chair doing the work?
Right.
And that's where the songs come from. The songs are not – there's some people who, you know, it's like they've got a radio. They turn in the dial. All of a sudden, through the mist and the crackle and the static, a song comes out and they write it down and they're done.
Right.
And I get that.
I've had that.
That's just not it for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's you do this job and a song comes out.
But
the end.
You know why your take is better? Because people like me that are more inspiration based, I know that you have a faucet you can go to and get water.
Mm.
You just got to spend enough time in front of the faucet. Yeah. If you don't have a faucet to go to, if you don't have the discipline of putting your ass in a chair, you don't trust that it's gonna come, right?
So I've taken this songwriting workshop twice with a guy named Craig Carruthers, who was a Nashville guy, and he's great. And he has lots of things like this. But when he says, you can write a song in 10 minutes if you give up the notion that you have to like it.
right.
And so there, if you...
True.
What makes it a song? It's got a melody, it's got lyrics, it's got chords, and it's done.
Right.
You can do that in 10 minutes. So he says inspiration is wonderful while if it happens.
It is,
but
right.
You know, I got work to do. So I
Do you have a feeling about like I've had people on here, and I'm thinking of one person in particular. He's like, yeah, I wrote like 500 songs, and he's like 30. I'm like, no, you didn't. You might have written 500 different pieces of something, but you can't like. To really write, like Springsteen can do it, but to really write 500 songs and to have spent enough time on each one so that each one's where it's supposed to be, I don't know.
Well, it's a lot of work, but there's nobody who decides that the song is done except the person writing it. You know, I heard this about Ed Sheeran. He wrote like 24 songs in a weekend and put out an album. And so I don't know anything about him or his music, but it's not, you know, Hank Williams said if it takes longer than half an hour to write a song, it's no good.
So it's all different.
Yeah. It's all different. Yeah. It's all different. Do you think Paul Simon writes a song in half an hour? Probably not.
Probably not, yeah.
But in terms of somebody writing 500 songs, yeah, you could have 500 finished combinations of words and lyrics.
Right.
You could do that.
I guess, but...
You got to let go of the idea that they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many good songs do you think you've written?
I've got, I would say, somewhere in the neighborhood of between 80 and 100.
Wow, that's great.
Where I would... If I died without recording those, I'd be very upset.
Mm, okay.
Of course, I'd be dead, so it wouldn't matter.
Right, well, you actually wouldn't be very upset.
But if, well, put it this way, which is a much more sobering and realistic way to look at it. If I reached the point where I could no longer record stuff anymore, mm-hmm. and that could happen, you hit my hand with a hammer or, you know, all kinds of things could make that happen.
Right.
Yeah, there are 80 to 100 that, some of which have I recorded, all right, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, if I didn't have that one recorded and all of a sudden my time was up, I'd be upset about that.
That's my nightmare. My nightmare is that, like, because you and I both play fingerstyle.
Yeah.
There's a time where your hand's not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
What do I do when a song hits me and I can't?
Well, so there are... There's two answers.
One is the robots. The robots are going to do it for me.
Well, that was not one of the answers I was considering. So one of the answers is you give up, and the other answer is you do it anyway.
Do it anyway, yeah.
And there's a little sign on my music stand where I practice, a little 3x5 card that says do it anyway on it.
Right.
And I was talking about this with a friend of mine who did the artwork for Dogs in the Water CD. Mm. I don't know if you have that.
I love that CD. I do have that.
So that drawing of the dogs?
Yep, yep.
So, first of all, there's no paper copy of that. She just drew that all on an iPad.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we said, well, you know what? We want to put that on the album cover, but your signature's in the wrong place. She says, don't worry. It's at a different layer. I just moved it over.
Yep.
But, so she uses a pencil, an electronic pencil to draw with, and she had Do It Anyway engraved on the pencil, which just...
Okay.
I love.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's, I find that a very useful idea.
Right, right. Have you ever... Do you write stuff that's just instrumental?
I have a couple.
I'm fast becoming of the belief that every singer-songwriter... Every third or fourth song you write should just be instrumental because it will force you to pay attention to the music on the other stuff that you're writing. If you can't cheat with a lyric, if you can't, you know, if I can't hold your attention, just the guitar for 2.5 minutes. So now I'm in that phase where like every third or fourth song I write is instrumental so that I'm just so I know I'm paying enough attention to it.
I think I have crossed that bridge. And I get what you're saying, but I reached the point where I had to dial back on the guitar playing because it was getting in the way.
Yeah.
So, and the reason is...
That's interesting.
I do a lot of writing on guitar, and so when I found the melody, I would play it as part of the guitar arrangement.
Mm.
And so it was...
I don't have that problem because I can't.
It was kind of cool, but on the other hand, it was kind of made everything sound a little bit the same.
Yeah.
And it was kind of limiting.
Right.
So I had to stop doing that. And now I do go in the other direction sometime where if I'm not really solid about the guitar part, it just kind of drifts along as one chord at the beginning of each measure. And that's no good either.
Right, right. One of the things I like about the way you pay attention to something that almost nobody pays attention to anymore. Dynamics.
Oh yeah,
I get so like Ed Sheeran, perfect example. No dynamics.
Yeah,
absolutely great songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
no dynamic. And it makes me crazy that people have lost that because it's so much, it's such a powerful tool.
Yeah.
And you, I can move you around with it, but people don't use it.
Yeah. Well, I think I was talking about my friend Dan Elias before. This plays this trio in the back of an Italian restaurant on Tuesday nights. That kind of music is much more my go-to stuff these days than to go to see somebody on a big stage.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I could walk to the Tarrytown Music Hall from my house.
Mm.
The last time I was there, it was the Westchester Symphonic Wind. So this is Rich's
thing, yeah.
Plays with him. And so you don't need a ticket in advance.
Right.
You go and you buy your ticket. You go and sit anywhere you want.
Nice.
And this last time I went, I was sitting in the downstairs part, and I was looking around, and I thought, you know, there's this big orchestra on the stage. All I can see is the people in the front row of the orchestra. What if I was in the balcony?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I go up to the balcony, sit up there, you know.
Right.
That's a different kind of vibe than if you pay your money to go see somebody.
Oh, right, and you're jammed up.
And you're going to sit in this seat.
Right, right. That's one of the cool things about music is you do, I mean, it works against the business, but you don't have to spend money to see really talented people.
Oh, there's so many people out there. And yeah, the music business is a completely separate thing. And my music is of no interest at all to the music business.
Is that true?
Yes. Well, that's been my experience.
Okay.
And sure, part of it is I'm not a businessman, so I don't know much about what to do.
You did development, but though.
If you look around and see new artists in the music business,
right,
who are in sort of in the folk tradition that I am, the singer-songwriter thing. One voice, one guitar, 72 years old. How many of those new artists are there out there?
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Nobody wants them. You know, it's so I could find, if I were sufficiently assiduous.
There's the next song, sufficiently assiduous.
I could find a way through Spotify and the other things.
Right.
To reach a niche market.
Right.
And it would take an awful lot of work. And my compensation for that would be zero.
Yeah, Spotify would be zero. Yeah.
And so that makes me think, and this is something that I wanted to talk with you about. So that makes me think that there is something good that I can do with this music that's just not one of these traditional channels that you and I both grew up with.
Right.
You know? You know, I like these songs, and people react to them in a positive way when they hear them. And I would like the idea. I like the idea that I can make the world better if it's by a millimeter, but make the world better with the songs I do. I like that idea. That was part of the joy of Sunday, is that here I am in a musical setting, people that I know and admire. Doing something that helps the community out is a very community focused kind of thing. Well, I should be doing that all day long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But so how do I organize myself so that, you know, we were talking about this channel before, that whatever the music impulse that is inside a person, what's the best way to nurture it and grow it and get it out into the world.
I know yours. And yours is one that I was going to try to do, but I think you should do because I think you'd do it better.
What's that?
You should write a folk opera.
Folk opera?
Yeah. You should write a folk opera. You're the way you write each album almost is an opera because there's a story in the beginning, middle, and end. You should write a folk opera. That's your ticket to compensation.
So last time, I did all eight songs from If I Had God's Ear.
If I Had God's Ear.
So that's kind of a self-contained kind of thing. So I appoint you as my agent to turn that into a business proposition for a folk opera.
For folk opera. Okay. I will do it because I've done the legwork for myself, but I'm not going to be as good. You would do a better folk opera than I would.
Well, okay. But you could. I'm appointing you my business manager for this project.
Okay. All right.
Because I really have no competence at this.
You do. It's
the music I can do.
Okay. You do the music. All right. When will you be done?
It's done. I've got 8 songs done. We're recording
but
them
we,
now.
But we need a story now. Like, oh, okay. It has to be an actual opera.
Oh, all right.
We need a story. Now, you could turn that into an opera for sure.
Well, let me work on that.
Okay. Because I love the idea of a folk opera, but it's hard to find somebody, and you're the guy. It's hard to find somebody that can keep a story interesting for an hour and a half, is versatile enough on the guitar and in the genre so that each song doesn't sound the same. Mm-hmm. Has to have a sense of humor because nobody's going an hour and a half without laughing. You're the guy. You should do it.
So let's talk about this seriously.
Okay.
Because there is, I think of an opera as something where everything is sung.
Yes.
There's also...
well,
like an operetta where some things are sung and some things are not.
Right.
There's a musical where there's mostly action. There's choreography. There's sets. There's this kind of stuff, and there's singing along.
Right.
And there is a suite of songs, which is kind of where it is at the moment, where you could sort of introduce a character, the character sings a song, and then you're on to the next one. And that's kind of the swath of live music plus story that I can imagine in the moment. Where are you seeing this?
I would love for you to pick a character and take them from beginning, or her or whatever, from beginning, middle to end. And flex. And I think for you, there should be some spoken parts because you're funny and you can write jokes.
Okay.
And so I think that would help.
Okay. And you're thinking that this could be actually produced, not a piece of, okay.
Totally. The idea of a folk opera is new. No one's done it before. Folk music is coming back. Singer-songwriter, is oddly enough in the face of all the technology reemerging. I have a theory about that. So it's the right time. It's the right place. It just needs to be written.
All right, I will take that idea very seriously.
Do, please, because I bet you could do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I bet you could.
I think 2 hours or an hour and a half is a lot first time out of the box.
You can do it.
But let's see.
I did it. The one-man show I did, Home From Here, was 2 hours. You can do it, which is once you get going.
Yeah.
Because, and that's where the talking helps.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking an hour and a half of music is 35 songs, but you don't need 35 songs.
Mm-hmm. So the closest thing I did to that was The Wonders of Westchester. And that one, there was just a short narrative, minute and a half,
right,
before each of 8 songs.
Right.
And that was kind of cool. But, not something that you just fall out of bed and do.
Right.
And there's also, it wasn't personal. There wasn't that story to it. But that's an interesting notion.
Yeah. I think you should do that. I've been trying to do it, and I can't get off the block. And what is
that stops you?
What stops me is I know there's people who could do it better.
All right.
And so I'm like, maybe this is like, I think it's a great idea. I don't need to do every good idea I have. Mm-hmm. And, I'm really kind of focusing on this anyway. Yeah. And this, I get creatively spent too.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be perfectly suited for it. And I, like my stuff's, a lot of my stuff is, I try to make my stuff like moving and poignant and sad or like really dramatic emotions. Mm-hmm. That's not sustainable for an hour and a half or 2 hours. Like,
No.
But you have ease. Ease is really fun. I don't, sometimes it's nice.
They look like ease.
No, but your songs have an ease to them. Like, I have an angel, he doesn't do anything. I have a dog. It's like that I can be interested in for an hour and a half and not overload. My stuff, you just kind of like, how many times can you sing about cancer? Tap out, God damn it, please, So, I think you'd be great. Do you want to do another song?
Sure.
Cool.
See if I can get through one today with under the words.
Well, that's the great thing about doing original music is the only person who knows.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
This is called Thanks to You.
Have I heard this?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And you were talking about what songwriters should do. I think every couple of songs, you should write something that starts with the word thank you until you... I mean, I think that's a fairly helpful place to start.
That's a good... I wrote a song about the whole Trish thing, and it's called Broken. And it starts with the words goddamn.
Mm-hmm.
And like, every time I say it, I'm like, I shouldn't start a song with that. And then it has like goddamn in it like three different times. Yeah. I'm going to go to thank you instead. You're right.
Well, yeah. It's
thank you is much better.
But sometimes,
see what I mean? That's ease.
Sometimes thank you is right, and sometimes goddamn is right.
True.
All right. Let me see here. Thank you for changing my face. It smiles all the time. It looks like I'm happy. Thank you for changing my feet. They don't even touch the street. Thank you for changing my sky. It's higher and brighter, and so am I. I am new. Thanks to you. Do you remember the old cartoons? Where people would dance wherever they'd go. Flowers would sing, the trees would sway, the sun would say hello. The world itself would sing a song, and everything in it would sing along. Well, that's my life today, and I think it will stay that way. Thank you for making me smart and handsome and strong and dashing and dapper. Thank you for making me see there's nobody else for me. Thank you for taking my hand and letting me know you'll never let go. I'm a different guy, and I'll tell you why. I am new, thanks to you.
I think that's my favorite song of yours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's a sweet... See, that's a sweet song.
Yeah.
That I can listen to for an hour and a half.
Okay. I had a guy come up to me. I think I did this one
last... That might be the shortest song you ever wrote, too.
That is pretty short. It's and I worry about that. But on the other hand, sometimes you need a short song.
Yeah,
and that's under 2 minutes.
Yep.
I don't know if I did...
I was like, where are the other verses?
Did I do the one about smell of the coffee last time I was here?
Yes. Yes.
So a guy came up to me at an open mic and said, wow, that's the best song you've ever done.
Nice.
Very nice thing to hear. You know, he hasn't heard Reservoir. He hasn't heard...
Right.
I mean, there's stuff... The song of mine that I am the proudest of, I never sing.
Why? And now I'm going to ask you to.
I don't know if I could today, but I could do it next time.
Okay.
It's depressing.
Mm.
But it has my favorite line that I ever wrote in it.
What's that?
My heart's as hard and hollow as a baby's coffin.
Oof. That's a good one.
And so that...
That's a good one.
That tells you everything you need to know about the song before you want to hear it.
Right, right.
That's a
good one.
So it's called Cowboy, and it's...
Next time. Do you know... Can you pinpoint the moment you said, wow, I really just want to play guitar and sing?
I think right around the time of Reservoir...
Really?
I was thinking...
No, I mean like just pick it up and learn it.
Oh, pick it up. Oh, no. I mean, I started as a piano player.
Right.
And got a guitar in high school. I don't remember why.
Girls.
Well, I never had any luck with girls.
Even with a guitar?
Even with a guitar.
I don't believe that.
No. And then I went to college, and in college there were pianos around, but they were not nowhere close. That was not the days when you could get a little keyboard and take it to your hotel, your college dorm room. And so the only thing around to play was guitar, and so I started to do that. But I the notion of having singing be a part of what I do, that's in the last 6-7 years.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was never on my radar.
That's incredible. I was talking to Merrick, the guy that played guitar Sunday.
Yeah.
I was talking to him, and I'm like, because he's a guitar player. And I'm like, why do you sing? And he's like, nah. And I'm like, why not? He goes, because just like playing the guitar. And I'm like, that was never on my radar to not. Mine was, went to a Catholic nursery school. And it was nursery school, yeah. So I'm like four.
Yeah.
And this nun comes out, and she's got a folk guitar, and she plays "Happiness Is" from "Your Good Man Charlie Brown."
Okay,
"Happiness is two kinds of ice cream." Da 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 da. And she's playing the guitar, and I distinctly remember at 4 years old going, "What the fuck is that? That's amazing! I so have to do that." Yeah.
I remember being in Boy Scout camp the first time I heard finger picking.
Uh huh.
Melody and bass at the same time.
Yep.
And then, you know, it was kind of in the air when I was growing up, and these books started to come out where Stephen Grossman was doing these books. Here's how Mississippi John Hurt sounded, here's how Blind Lemon Jefferson sounded, and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't have any of the records. I was going to figure it out from the books, and it was just a mess.
It's interesting, because we kind of grew up amongst singer-songwriters and acoustic guitar, and that was amazing. And I'm wondering, like, what's Gramercy growing up with that she's going to carry and be able to integrate into her own life? Because like you said, you can play guitar pretty much anywhere. But the way music is, I don't know.
I think there's something about the combination of music and the age. You're going to take it in whatever it is, and you're going to
figure it out.
You'll figure it out.
Right.
So, you know,
and it's also interesting because her and her friends listen mostly to like 70s, like singer songwriter, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like, if I had a phone when I was in high school, it would sync up pretty well to what her phone looks like now in terms of the music. Yeah. So, I think that's interesting. I don't know if, and I think the resurgence of country. Helps with that too, because, you know, country is mostly acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
And I think that helps.
I mentioned Ted Gioia before. He just had this post that he did a couple of months ago that attracted a lot of attention. And I'm going to try to summarize it, but you should go read it, because the notion is interesting, but he's much better at explaining it than this explanation will allow. If you can picture the cartoon where there's one little fish being swallowed by a bigger fish, and then a bigger fish, string of big fishes. So the first fish is art. So art is part of people's lives. You know, going back a ways, it's just normal that there's art in your life. It may be just your grandmother singing while she shells the peas, but it's some kind of art.
Right.
At some point along the line, entertainment gets developed. All right. And so now there's this overlay. Then the next thing is distraction. So these days, you want to watch YouTube videos, you might watch 50 of them.
Right.
In an hour, because you're not watching the whole thing. You're just, oh, that's pretty good. I really don't want to go wash the dishes, so I'm going to watch another one.
Right.
You're no longer entertaining yourself. You're distracting yourself.
Got it. Okay.
And then I forget what he called the last one, but this is kind of the dopamine thing where remember how he described it. It's addiction.
Okay.
Where you're scrolling through the next video. because you need that dopamine hit in your brain, and you didn't get enough of a one from, so you got a little bit, little taste, and it's gone in 30 seconds, mm-hmm. and you need more. And the largest corporations in the world, Apple, Google, all these people, Facebook, are function because of that dopamine hit.
Right.
Without that, they don't function.
Right.
And he's saying this is the state of the culture these days.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a particularly concise or useful description of this longer article, which I think might have been called the state of the culture.
I wonder, though, like, dopamine's not new. Like, I know people get down on Facebook and YouTube. And so, dopamine's not new. You used to live for Saturday morning to see those cartoons that were only on once a week because that was your dopamine. And before that, you used to hunt a tiger so that at night you could go in a cave and bang a drum and play and tell stories, and that was your dopamine hit.
But it wasn't every 30 seconds. If you think of it as addiction, that's his premise. This is no different from a chemical dependency. It's just, it's the same. And I can't argue this because I read the article and it made sense to me, but I don't have the background to it.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying. It's a.
That this addiction is.
It's an addiction.
It is eating the art.
It's eating the people.
Right. Right.
And it's become large. So that's the thing. First of all, the art was this size element of your life.
Right.
And it kind of got subsumed by entertainment.
Yes.
And then entertainment has become subsumed by distraction.
Yes.
And now what's driving, and the addiction is larger now than the distraction.
Yeah. Well,
so anyway, this is not something for a casual conversation,
it's interesting though, because if one thing about the addiction, I have a contrary view to a lot of people on this. One thing about the addiction is it has allowed more creators than ever before, and so if I end up in a world where everybody's creating and everybody's addicted to those creations, I'm kind of okay.
Hmm.
You know, if we end up, now, there's 2 million podcasts in the world, and 3 years ago there were 200,000.
Yeah.
If this system lets us have 20 million and the other 20 million people are addicted to listening to it, okay. Why is that bad?
Well, first of all, I will reject your premise.
Okay.
That there are more creators now than before.
Well, more creators have a platform now.
Right, but there was a time when everybody was a creator, when nobody was afraid to get up and sing at a party because everybody could get up and sing at the party.
Right. Right. Right.
So, the notion of generating, of having an artistic experience, generating an artistic experience that other people can share in, that's universal,
right?
Until Western culture comes in. I'm making this stuff like I'm a professor, but the notion is that to me that we have been encouraged to turn this stuff over to the pros.
See, I think it's going the other way now.
Well, but we're turning it over to people with platforms, right? I mean, if you wanted to learn how to play a Charlie Christian song, there are thousands of people on YouTube who have learned the phrase from the Charlie Christian book,
right?
And they will show you how to play it, right?
Right.
So the I don't know that the number of platforms is an absolute good, So yes, it's nice that there's all these sources of information out there. All of them, to some extent, marred by the same thing we were talking about before, where it's so easy for a charlatan to appear in the midst of all this, and it's hard to tell the people who are not charlatans.
Right.
So we have this ocean of platforms that is inherently untrustworthy.
Yes, but that's where, see, that's where I think the that's where I think the market corrects it. There's 20 million podcasts out there. There's 1,500 of us that draw over 500 people. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think the market will filter you out, but I think it's great that the other people get to try.
Not something I have thought about to any great extent. You know,
like for example, like you don't have a YouTube channel. You do have a YouTube channel.
I don't have an active YouTube channel.
Okay, you should, because you're fun to watch. That's a great venue for you, and you know it to pull. And the market will come to you. People who like 72-year-old guys who are guitar geniuses.
I'm married to her. You know, that's I've found her.
I know. I'm so jealous. We've had that conversation. Trish vacuums underneath me, and Andrea actually listens to you and knows your stuff. So I'm so jealous of that. Do you want to play us out of here? We're at an hour and a half. Can you believe it?
You want to? What do you want to hear? Just a song, or
what do you want to do? You're the coolest gear. That's the coolest guitar strap. Oh, and by the way, I cannot let you go without thanking you for the Page capo.
Oh.
This has changed my life.
Great.
Yeah. I have every... Talking to the microphone like somebody knows what they're doing. I have every conceivable capo. $400 capos, $200 capos, $19 capos. That's the only one that works. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And wait, so where do we hear your music?
Spotify, it's on Spotify. Okay. I have some stuff on YouTube, as you so correctly pointed out. It's on Pandora and Apple Music and, you know, all those places. When you do things so that the company that I use to get my stuff out into the world is CD Baby, and they put it all over the
Great.
Place.
Great. All right. Wonderful. Tom Haney, not Heaney.
Take a walk by the river, everybody ought to do it. Let the curve of the riverbank guide your steps. Spend an hour with no destination. Let the edge of the water be your GPS. Take a walk by the river, everybody ought to do it. When your breath is foggy in the crystal air, warm your hands around a hot cup of coffee. Let the dogs run around, they don't care. The river runs along and you stand still, your feet on solid ground. But if your mind is easy and your soul gets loose for a minute, it could be the other way around. River, everybody ought to do it. If you like it in the city, you should try it in the town. Like it in the town, you should try it in the mountains. The cold, clear water comes tumbling down. Take a walk by the river, everybody ought to do it. On a Sunday morning, that's where I'll be. The sunlight sparkles in the ripples on the water. Right there's close enough to church for me. Used to be a river meant water and food and a highway and a fence, but it's all turned around, but it all stayed more or less the same in a metaphysical sense. Take a walk by the river, everybody ought to do it. Bring your sweetie when the sun is low. By the banks of the river, you can put it all together. If you got something better, well, I'd like to know.